This episode is brought to you by Chiefs on Broadway. There's a different way to experience live music in Nashville. Eric Church's Chiefs on Broadway is home to the Neon Steeple, an intimate live music venue in the heart of downtown Nashville, where artists and songwriters take the stage for up-close, unforgettable shows. From stripped-down sets to surprise guests, no two nights are the same. Check out the Neon Steeple lineup and get your tickets now at chiefsonbroadway.com. It's June. Happy June. We believe there's no time quite like summer to enjoy some country music. BGS is leaning into all things quality country with our sister site, Good Country. This month's edition of Good Country highlights Artist of the Month, Jody Messina, and we have sit-downs with Braxton Keith, the Broody Brothers, and Ashley McBride. Dive in at thebluegrasssituation.com/goodcountry, and thank you for being part of the BGS and Good Country communities. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation. I'm your host, Cindy Howes, and today we are celebrating 30 years of Matt Smith, who is the managing director at a magical place called Club Passim in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Before we get into that, let's talk about ways we can stay in touch. You can sign up for Basic Folk's newsletter, basicfolk.com, or you can check out the link in the show notes for the sign-up button. You can follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok at Basic Folk Pod. We're also a listener-supported podcast, so if you'd like to make a contribution, you can do so at basicfolk.com/donate or grab that link in the show notes. Excited about this one today for our good buddy Matt Smith, a living legend with his unbelievable 30-year run at Club Passim, the historic folk venue nestled in a Harvard Square basement. Currently, Matt is the managing director at Passim. He is the most passionate music lover I know. He's used his platform at Passim to help establish artists like Lori McKenna, Anais Mitchell, Lake Street Dive, and so many more. I met Matt while working as a student at WERS, where he was bringing in fantastic shows into a listening room filled with people who were clamoring for honest music in an intimate space. He's been a very good friend and mentor to myself and, let's say, thousands of others since he began his tenure at the club in 1995. In honor of Matt's 30th anniversary, we brought two longtime friends on the pod to talk to him about his role in the community and beyond. Musicians Edie Carey and Dinty Child join us in conversation with Matt about advice he would give his younger self, what a vacation without music would look like, and his incredible memory. That memory is tested in the lightning round where he answers almost 100% correctly Club Passim trivia. There's also a discussion of what Matt is most proud of in all of his years at the club, the Campfire Festival, which takes place every Memorial Day and Labor Day weekends, featuring sets in the round of mostly unknown newer acts. I would imagine if you're listening to this episode of Basic Folk, you either know Matt or know Club Passim. Hello to all of our friends, and I hope you enjoy this window into one of the best people we all know, your friend and mine, Matt Smith, on Basic Folk. I'm so thrilled to welcome Dinty Child and Edie Carey on Basic Folk today, who are here to interview Matt Smith.
Woo!
Hey, everybody. Thanks for being here.
Hello.
So happy to be here.
This is your warm-up question. Edie and Dinty, how did you each meet Matt, and when did he first make an impression on you, like showed you his funny, bizarre personality or did something professionally for you that was above and beyond? Like, basically, when did he first make your jaw drop?
Dinty, do you want to go first?
Yeah, let me give it a shot. I I'm not totally sure, but I think the when I sort of played Passim the first time I remember playing Passim in the sort of modern era, I used to hang out some in high school, was Lori Geltman did a big Cast of Thousands show that I was a part of. And it was like one of those, I think it was like one of the first sort of Cast of Thousands shows we did there, which has become a regular thing.
What is a Cast of Thousands show?
Well, in other words, she had lots of guest artists, Trina Hamlin, Jimmy Ryan, Jim Finney. There was like about 20 different musicians. She made a live record. And I don't even remember what year that was, but I have a feeling that that was when. But then what I really remember is I did a campfire around there with Chandler Travis, and Chandler has a song called Nose for Danger, which is a very, it's a very apt spoof of an inept folk singer. And Matt Smith was practically spewing liquids out of his face during that song because I think it hit
sure
really
was.
Close to home. And so then I was like, okay, this is a guy I can get behind. And then he's, of course, he's like been a champion and gotten me to do all kinds of stuff that I didn't know I was going to do. So that's great.
Oh, I love that. I like Dinty. I feel like it was so long ago that I first met Matt, but I believe I was living in New York City when I started playing, even though I was from Dedham, Mass. I think I was home visiting my dad, and I think I got the guts to go to an open mic at Passim, and I was freaking terrified. And Matt was there that night, and I was like, oh, there's Matt. He's in charge. You know, I was like kind of terrified.
You knew he was, you knew he was the guy.
I think I did. Yeah, I definitely did. And I just sort of, what I do remember feeling was a conversion of total fear to, oh, this guy is warm and he's like a complete goofball. Like, I think I got that right away. And then the way that I love, because I'm a complete goofball, I was like, oh, I think we might speak the same humor language. Mm-hmm. But I was still intimidated. And I think I played that night and it was fine. I don't really remember how that went, but I just remember I think we emailed a couple of times and he was always just very nice. And I remember thinking how many people are wanting things from this man. And he just was very sweet. And then I think I maybe met him at NERFA. Matt, I don't know if you remember when we first met. There were a lot of encounters, but I just remember then you brought me in. I think you had me open for Cliff Eberhardt, I believe was my first.
That sounds right.
And then Campfire. But it was like every time we'd interact, there was this like new unfolding of like your hilarity. And I just totally fell in love with you as a human being and saw the generosity and the like that we could be full on idiots with each other. And I was like, he's my guy. I just loved him immediately. You know,
here's what I remember, Edie, is I remember. I used to get your, you know, at the club would get your gig postcards.
Oh, God.
When people used to mail postcards.
I did.
It was like you in a buzz cut and a baseball hat and like.
Yeah, being a complete
like
idiot.
Every one of them was like, and I'm like, who is this person? Like, this is just weird and I don't get it.
I forgot about that.
And then I remember, you know, being when the office was 100% down in the green room.
Yeah. Oh, that's,
you know,
right.
Like the,
yeah.
The entire operation was down there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
In the green room.
Oh my God.
And that window that is now has the whiteboard over.
Yeah.
You know, that was open to the lobby, mm-hmm. so that when people came in, and I remember getting a phone call from you.
Oh God.
And I was like, okay, you know, because that was back when, like, I don't think I even had email yet.
Yeah.
Or if I did, you know, you didn't check it.
Yeah.
And
why would you do that?
I got a call from you, and then I went to go see you at the Kendall Cafe.
Oh, my God, that's right. Thank you for seeing your brain. Your brain is so good. Okay.
And then, yeah, Dinty, I totally remember that Lori Geltman recording, because Brian Dozer was recording it.
Yeah. And the board was out on the back patio.
Well, yeah, but at first he was like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to, we can't fit it. And I'm like, why don't we put the recording all out in the back patio? And he's like, oh, we could do that. We could totally do that. Then I'm right by the stage. And then he's like, that's amazing. That's a great idea. You know, and it was just like,
man, that back patio.
Seen some times.
It has never actually been used as a patio.
No, there's no patioing happening.
There was a time for a couple of different times, like Veggie Planet used it. And actually back in the pre-Veggie Planet days, that would get used as seating for some things.
Weird. I never saw it.
The rats would carry somebody away now. Yeah.
Oh, Matt, this is just such a perfect example of how incredible your memory is. Thank you. Thank you. Mine is quickly eroding. But
well, yeah.
All is to say, I feel like we've all known each other so long that it's all sort of like braided back into the back of our brains. And like we've known each other since we were tiny, tiny humans. And we have. At this point,
we have
our friendship is like one big rat king.
Oh, wow. Wow. All interwoven. And yeah,
it's a rat king on the back patio. Well, listen, that's my only question. And I'm just going to take a back seat and let these guys talk to you, Matt Smith.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Get ready. Get ready, dude.
I'm ready.
OK. All right. I'm starting.
Bring it.
OK, so I have my own theories as to why you've had such an extraordinary 30 years at Passim, but I'm curious what you think your particular superpower is. And maybe when you're answering that question, how did you learn it? And did you have a Matt Smith in your life?
Ooh, did I have a Matt Smith in my life? Not specifically. You know, it's sort of an amalgamation of a whole bunch of little pieces of people over the years. Mm-hmm. And you know, and a lot of that comes from people who organize well. People that can, you know, put together a party, if you will.
Yeah.
And if I were to say I had a superpower or just like what is the driver of what I do, it is connecting people.
Yeah.
Whether that be artists to each other or artists and audiences.
Mm.
You know, I love finding that right opening act for that right audience. You know, it's not even that the people are going to be, you know, the artists are going to necessarily connect as well, but like that it's going to just hit home with an audience and that artist is going to walk away with a room full of new fans.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it is like, you know, with the campfire where you're trying to see, sometimes it's just like, these are the four people that can play at that time.
Right.
You know,
logistics.
That's how that round comes together.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is very intentional.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, this person's going to love that person's going to love this person, you know? And sometimes it is that people know each other somewhat already, and you know that there's that chemistry that's going to take it to a different place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's finding those discovery moments that are always like the just at the heart of the way I think about anything.
Yeah. You're looking kind of for the magic and the connection sort of coming together. You are incredibly good at that. That's how I met my best friend, Rose Cousins, because you thought these two have idiotic senses of humor.
Was going to work, yeah.
I think that's the reason we get along so well, too, because I'm always doing
100%.
I love that.
I've learned a lot from Dindy.
Well, you've enabled me quite a bit, for better or worse. All right, next question, Matt Smith. You obviously have a lot of perspective from your 30 years at the club. What's something you'd want to tell your just starting out self? In other words, could you see someone starting out now in 2026 with the music industry being what it is and becoming a Matt Smith-like figure in the community?
I would say stay wide open. Because the fact is, when I came into this, I had a very narrow view of what I liked. And, you know, it was kind of in the singer-songwriter realm. And, you know, whenever I'd get a compilation album from a festival or something like that, you know, and it would have all of these different kinds of things on it, I'd be like, skip, skip. Yeah, okay, this one I like. Skip, skip. Oh, the Cajun song. Nah, I don't want that. The fiddle tune. I don't want that. And now God, I love all of it. You know, and just the idea of don't put things in boxes. Make sure you keep those walls down and you're open to everything. Because to me, that is something that I have learned so much over the years, and I have gotten into so many different kinds of music just by sometimes it's, you know, over time you grow an appreciation and then you start to actually like it, you know, but then other times it's the people that you meet and the excitement that they have and the scene that they have. And you see how that can all come together. You know, if you told me when I started working at Club Passing that I'd be a big fan of Celtic music, I'd be like, that's
funny. That's hilarious.
But now, like, that is such a huge part of my life because of the people that I love. And again, you know, I was in my mid-20s. You know, you're kind of like exerting yourself as to like, this is who I am.
Right.
You know, and then you have to... You've spent the first part of your life building up to that, like, I am now me. And then you spend the rest of your life deconstructing that and saying, you know what? You don't have to just be that. There's so much more out there.
I before we did this interview, I listened to your interview that you did with Cindy in 2019 and you talking about, you know, like your first concert was Sha-na-na at Great Woods, I think, right? Or whatever it's called now.
No, it's at South Shore Music
School. South Shore. So sorry. Oh, wow. Sorry. And, you know, I think so many of us, I didn't grow up with a lot of folk music, and it doesn't sound like you did either. But then you found, it's like you have your gateway artist that you're like, holy crap, this is like literate and beautiful, incredibly well-constructed music and smart and emotive. And I want more of that. And then you described going through like the folk bins that were super tiny at Strawberry's Music, trying to find the artists you like. And I think I love your openness. I've seen that evolution in you over the years. I don't think you would have been that into folk, you know, Celtic or maybe bluegrass early on. But it's so cool to see from an artist's perspective, see you just are so celebratory of so many different artists. And you find maybe one artist in that genre, and you're like, holy crap, this bridges that gap. And then you're in that next room. It's like from pop to folk, from folk to bluegrass. It's really cool. I think a lot of us are experiencing that, too. It's so cool to see that.
It's kind of that discovery, you know, that idea of I love to find a record and then look at, you know, all the liner notes and see who this person is and who that person is. And then like, oh, here we go. Here we go down a rabbit hole.
I know.
And then, you know, hundreds of records later, as I sit in this junk heap.
Yes. You know? And you have such curiosity, Matt. It's just one of my favorite things about you is your deep curiosity.
Endless. That's endless. I just love finding out about new things. And there is, you know, you can never be done with that. There's always new things because like, and that's going in both directions. I will never listen to all the things that have been recorded already. And then there's all the things yet to be recorded.
Yeah.
So it's just endless in both directions.
It's really cool. All right. Well, okay. Now, we've already proven that your memory is far superior to mine. But I seem to recall, and I hope I'm right, that there were occasionally in the rounds at Campfire, and maybe there still are, where the Passing staff would sometimes do rounds. I feel like there was a manager's round. My former manager, Matt Asbell, I feel like maybe did an in the round with you. Like half the people were named Matt on stage. And I'm just curious, when you first kind of started to weave yourself into the Passing scene or the Club 47 scene, what were your dreams? Was it to just enjoy music or did you also maybe want to be a songwriter? And were you ever writing songs back then?
Not back then, but before then.
Before you were.
Before, like when I was in college and just after college, I play guitar somewhat.
Yeah.
And some other instruments somewhat.
Yeah.
And tried to write songs and was never really happy with how they came out. But then when I started working at Passing, or even when I started just volunteering, I felt like I had something else to offer to the community, that I could be a part of this from another direction,
mm-hmm.
and support people in a way that they weren't necessarily able to support themselves.
Mm-hmm. And that was clear to you back then, like, not like, oh, yeah. maybe I want to be part of this as a performer. You felt like a clarity about that.
Once in a rare while, I'll get up on stage and do something. And it's usually purely to knock myself down a couple of pegs.
In a Sergeant Pepper outfit.
Exactly.
So good.
And just one, to see if I can still do it a little bit.
Yeah.
And two, to kind of humble myself in front of the people that I see every day that do this so well.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know, to be part of the fun of that and the joy of that.
Yeah.
Without needing to take myself so seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
From that side of things.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Interesting. Okay, Matt. So you are plainly a music obsessive, as is evidenced by your apartment.
Describe the apartment quickly.
The apartment behind Matt is a wall of LPs, a bin of CDs, which may be from the club or something. In the room behind him is another wall of LPs. There's a lot going on.
Not
there.
A streaming service in sight, by the way.
Nope.
I got rid of Spotify. I got rid of it.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that many of your nights off, you might just be watching a show at the club. You might be out at another club in town seeing somebody. And I think in all the time I've known you, I've never known you to really take a vacation. You do a weekend away here or there. Not even that, hardly. As far as I know, I know of like a weekend you go away a year and you go to the Marshfield Fair and a few other things. Anyway, that's all amazing. But what I was curious about was if I said you absolutely had to take a 2-week vacation, money is no object, and it can't be music related in any way, what would you do? And does that just make you feel really queasy?
It makes me a little tense, I'm not going to lie.
But more, it's more like, is there something that you would like to do, someplace you would like to go, something you would like to see? I'm just, you know, a little window into Matt Smith.
Yeah, I love to go on long drives and long walks and things like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, vacation to me is just kind of decompression, just sitting around reading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love to just sit around and read when I don't have to do that. I love to take a long time to cook.
Mm.
So I have been on vacations. I mean, oftentimes with groups of people, you know, like a kind of a gang of folks that probably do make music for a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, like I've rented a house with a bunch of folks and just like been on the beach for a week.
Okay. All right.
Stuff like that where it is, you know, it's like you wake up, you make breakfast together, and then you go to the beach and you sit and you read and you play games and you watch.
I just want to interject here, like listening to Matt talk about this, like a normal person, you'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. That sounds like fine and normal, but I feel like maybe Edie, Vinci, and my minds are all like blown right now. Like we cannot believe
this. Well, I mean, it's happened a couple times.
He's just not posting about it on the socials, so maybe we don't know.
And also, it has been a long time.
Yeah. So.
But you're not going to South America or New Zealand or hiking the West Scottish Way or.
Those things sound interesting, but like. It's funny because I differentiate between a trip and a vacation.
Yeah.
Like a trip has a thing that you're doing. A vacation doesn't.
Right. You're right. It's games. It's reading. It's napping.
Yeah, right. I have so much stimulation all the time.
Yeah,
you do.
In a positive way.
Yeah.
That I don't crave the busyness of what people think of as vacation that I think of as trip.
Right.
Yeah.
But like that sounds stressful to me.
Yeah. Of travel per se.
I want unscheduled time
to
be vacation.
Not like we're going to see this museum at 9 a.m. and then we're going to walk 12 miles. Right.
And I think it's amazing. I should say, you know, I just think you are so this is what feeds you, you know. Yeah. It's like you're so devoted to music and the people who make it and all that stuff. So that's cool. It's neat. I was just curious. All right.
Okay, so you have always had this sort of magic way of making everybody who walks into the club, like whether it's an artist or a patron, just feel supremely welcomed. You're just warm and kind and welcoming, and you just set people at ease with your humor, and it's just an incredible skill. And I think it feeds right into what you were saying about finding that connection and that magic. You're so good at that, even in the most like mundane circumstances. And you have an unbelievably encyclopedic memory for all these stories and details in our histories. It's really quite remarkable. And when I think about, you know, I come to play at the club once a year, and I think of like, I'm one of 300 plus artists who are doing that every year. And all the things that you remember about all of us and our shared histories together, it's incredible. And I'm just curious, do you feel like you, since you were a little tiny Matt Smith, do you feel like you always had that capacity for kind of connection and memory and shared experiences? Or do you feel like that's a muscle that you've kind of grown since working there?
I feel like that's something that's grown, you know, like,
yeah,
in that when I came to the club, I really found, you know, my people, if you will.
Yeah.
And found a community that I never really had. I was kind of a weird kid that felt lost in all realms. Like I never felt like I plugged into anything as a kid, like into a group or a scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had ties with all of the groups, you know, in a way that probably a lot of people don't. You know, I was friendly with everyone, but close to no one.
Yeah.
And then somehow this world snapped into place and made so much sense to me, like I had never truly experienced before.
Mm. I love that. That makes perfect sense. I certainly, that's been true for me in the folk scene too. And I think so many people find that to be their experience. I love hearing that from you. Great.
Yeah, that's so cool. All right, Matt Smith, if you were a tree, what kind would you be? No, I'm not going to make you answer that. But I do.
I am curious.
But I do
want,
a fallen one.
A fallen tree.
A ooh, ba-boom. I do want to know that. I'm curious if you hadn't been doing this for the last 30 years, could you see yourself have done doing something else? Could you see yourself have, no, that's wrong tenses, but what else do you think you might have done?
I truly don't know. I'm not a great planner of life. I just kind of ride that wave of whatever is going on. I never went to school with a direction of a career path.
What did you study?
I have an English degree. You
know, that's, I never like, knew that.
That's so many of us.
I didn't know that either.
I love it.
Abby does too. You know.
Yeah. Like,
oh, yep. It's the degree of the people where, you know, when you're a junior and they say you need to have a major to graduate, and I'm like, well, what have I taken the most? which subject am I closest to a degree in?
Yep.
And so I have an English degree. And then when I got out of school, I was like, bah, I don't know what to do. Like, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And was not particularly drawn to anything specifically. But I was going to concerts all the time. And I you know, I love live music and recorded music, obviously. But I didn't start working at the club, you know, with this idea that I was going to go into the music industry or anything like that, you know, and I still don't think that I'm in the music industry, you know.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, for the class I teach, I differentiate between the music business and the music industry.
Mm.
Like the music industry is about making money, as any industry is. Mm. And the music business is about making music.
Mm.
That's where I live.
I love that. That's good.
I do too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it makes sense. It's like you found your thing, right? Yeah. You found the place that fits you. In the famous words of Abby Leonhardt, as an 11-year-old said, just keep doing what you like to do, and eventually people think that that's what you do. and it's completely true. I find it's true for me, and it's true for you, and you know. Can never not do this. So that's great.
Yeah. It's not really a choice. It does kind of wrap itself around you and choose.
It's not really a choice. Yeah. It's not a choice.
Okay. Well, that sort of leads nicely into this next question. What would you say? This is a two-parter. What would you say have been the
classic Cindy Howes, the two-parter?
I like a four-parter.
Cindy is so good at the multi-layered.
Just wait for Dinty's next question. It has like seven questions in it.
Yeah, it's like six.
Feel free to pick just a couple of those questions, Dinty. I'm just realizing.
Okay.
A few of my questions I sent to Cindy, and I was like, these are way too long, so like just chop away. And then she would be like, what about this? She'd add two more. My kind of girl. So what would you say have been your most sort of challenging aspects of this job? And what are the parts that still make you feel like the most joyful and excited? And how have those things changed over the years, if they have?
Well, the most joyful and excited is like connecting people.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting people together. And that has been the same.
Yeah.
You know, throughout the entirety of my time, because you're always going to be meeting new people and connecting new people, and there's new audience members, and you want to turn them on to things. And, you know, you might turn them on to the next thing, but you might turn them on to the thing that already happened before. And so like that's always there. Sometimes, you know, like things can get frustrating at times for any number of reasons organizationally,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yeah, it's hard to kind of really put that specifically into words. But, you know, the organization has gone through a lot in the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been moments of tension and frustration where, you know, I'm looking for organizational support to be able to get to do the thing that I think I do well.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be a battle.
Yeah.
And that's never a fun thing to feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. I guess there's no job where that's not a thing.
Yeah. Cause you know, cause I love doing this and I want to keep doing it.
Yeah. I was also thinking about COVID, you and Abby kind of like that time too, just trying to keep everything afloat during that time. You guys were unbelievable and all the concerts you put on.
Well, to me that was, you know, Cindy was a major part of that too. And you know, being able to work together towards solutions as meager as they might have been was still important.
Mm.
You know, and there were times that I felt guilty because, you know, Abby and Cindy and I would like go down to the club and get to see live music. You know, we'd bring someone to the club and be like, ooh, we get to have a show.
Yeah. Just
and,
us.
You know, you can all watch online. That's fine. But like COVID was strange in that way, but also ended a lot of things, you know, that, you know, a lot has changed since then, you know, in a million ways. And it's kind of navigating a new world now.
Yeah.
Where there's all the same things, but then there's other aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, it was remarkable how you guys navigated that and kept, it was just it was a very bright spot. I think, I don't know, just seeing all the things you were doing to kind of keep things alive and going and connected. It was pretty remarkable how you guys did that.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Cindy took my two-parter and turned it into nine questions. I just counted, but I don't think we'll get to all nine. But I wanted this to be like spur of the moment, this next question. So I'm going to give you 6 seconds if I could do my timer. I'm going to give you 6 seconds to name the three most memorable shows. Go.
My 50th birthday, Hadestown, and beyond that, it's just like a whole shit ton of stuff. Mm. You know, like there's, you know, whether it be the Sub Rosa shows or the old Live for New York shows or any number of campfire things that have happened. Mm-hmm. There's just been, there's so many, but like those two are right up there.
It's pretty good. He could mention, like, come up with at least two. Yeah.
And I was there.
And Dinty was there.
Yeah.
For both.
And I was there for both.
Yeah, that's why he asked.
So good.
He's just like, I know what this is going to be.
I'm jealous.
It's like shooting fish in a barrel.
I suspected, but I was more curious what the third one was going to be. But what you're saying is I can't pick a favorite child. You know, it's.
I can pick two favorite child. So, and then after that, who cares?
It's a wash.
So all right. So then. I'll follow up with some of Cindy's questions here. So how have you been able to develop a sense of what will make a show good? What does make a show good, particularly memorable, I guess, to you? And how have you developed that sense? Or is it just, it's not even, you just put the pieces in place?
Good and memorable are different things. Like, they're not necessarily the same at any given time. You know, it might be memorable. And I'm not saying like good versus bad. A lot of times it's seeing things be elevated. Mm. You know, it's collaboration and the spark that artists get from each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen solo artists get up on stage and put on a 2-hour show that is transcendent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then when you take a bunch of people and get them together where they're inspiring each other. I mean, that's why it's funny at Campfire these days, so many folks just want their own set because they don't understand that when they're in the round, they actually can inspire and elevate each other. And also, It's the audience gets to watch the high wire act of seeing how this is going to come together. And a lot of times an audience will leave during the solo set, you know, like the audience tends to thin out during the solo sets and then get bigger during the rounds. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to me when artists have that, like, no, I want to be the center of attention, and that's how I'm going to hold them. I'm going to build my set, and here's where we're going to go, and I'm going to take them on this journey. And sometimes it's the spontaneity that people are looking for, you know, like the not the planned specific thing. So I think that is one of the main things, is spontaneity, living in the moment. That's what's going to make something memorable and good. It is, if someone's doing the same thing scripted, I'm going to do all these shows and I'm going to say the same banter and tell the same stories. And some people can do that very, very well and make it seem like it is in the moment. Mm-hmm. But when it is in the moment, you know, you really sense that. You get that feeling that, you know, people are reacting directly to each other, and the artist is reacting to the audience as well.
Or in the round when they're maybe had a song in mind to play, and then they
have to change it. They're like, nope.
Hell no.
I've got the perfect song to go after that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nothing beats Deb Talon in the round with Langhorne Slim.
Oh, God. She was like,
she was terrified.
I wish I had seen that. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I think Meg Hutchinson was in that round, too.
Oh, my God.
That track.
See the memory. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Yeah. Plainly, I had a show the other night that was all of that. And so it's something that.
And it was so joyous.
Cindy and Edie, do you know about that I did this show last Saturday?
Yeah.
He had a cancellation, as often happens. Matt will call me me and Zach and a few people. And hey, do you want to do something? And I had a sing along where I projected the words to my songs up. And I had a band.
Oh,
I
my
had
gosh.
Drums, bass, and ripping guitar. Yeah. And I projected the words, so it were my songs.
Yeah.
But we just, it was like, I don't want this to be a show. We're just singing together. And I had no idea if it was going to work. And the audience didn't know what they were in for, but
from the jump, it worked.
Oh. Yeah. And it totally worked. I want to make this.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah.
Well, because at Passim, it's so intimate. You can't really sing along without annoying the people next to you if you're in the audience. But like, to just have full permission to just go for it.
Full permission.
Every lyric.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And to know, have all the lyrics. So it's not like, meh, meh, meh.
Yeah.
You, you know what you're singing.
It's like folk karaoke. I love it.
Exactly.
That's so good.
Kind of like Edie karaoke.
Edie karaoke, which is a whole other thing. Dinty, I'm going to copy you. I want to do that. That's
you
so
should.
Fun.
That and that show writes itself, that title right there.
I've been sitting on that for 22 years.
She coined that.
That's been a long time.
This is where it came to be.
Doing
I love
late,
it.
Doing that late night at the club.
Matt, we're changing the format for November 14th. It's going to be all great. Right. Can't wait. Dinty, before we go on to mine, do you want to ask any of the 37 follow-up questions?
Let's see.
I want to know about the golden years. I'll just put my...
Me too. Yeah,
go
me
ahead.
Too.
Cindy can...
Yeah, so I wondered, Matt, like what you consider your heyday at Club Passim or your golden years?
You're saying that I'm sunsetting now? Is that
I mean, aside from now, like when you're like, I wish I could go back to this particular time.
Mm.
I don't think like that. There are so many moments. You know, I've witnessed many generations come through the club in ways where someone who might have played the club 20 years ago and has gone on to bigger things might come back and look at our schedule and go, who the fuck are these people? I don't know anyone on this schedule right now. And there are times that I think people know each other and I realize they don't. They just both know me. You know, it's like, well, I knew you like 10 years ago and you were like 6 years after that.
Yeah.
So there's always the excitement of new things, you know, and I've gotten to grow up with people like, you know, like Edie or Chris Delmhorst or like all these people that kind of got started around the same
Edie, this
time.
Is kind of like what you were about to ask, Matt. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you want me to? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to cut off Matt, though. But
well, so the, yeah, there's no like golden years, like the heyday. Of
yeah.
Like, oh, well, you know, well, it'll never be like that.
Yeah.
Because it's always different.
Yeah.
It's always different, but then at the same time, there's always going to be new artists and new ways of interacting with each other and new great ideas of things. You know, I don't want to be that person that says like, oh boy, it's never going to be like it was in the late 90s.
Yeah. But that's your openness and your curiosity coming back into play where you're kind of not nostalgic. You like you all the richness is there and it's all leading into further new richness. It seems like you're very open to all of that. Yeah. Very cool. Well, this is sort of, as Cindy said, this is kind of along those lines. Out in Colorado, like our school year is about to wrap up, even though it's very early May. So I'm sort of in the end of the year craziness with my kids. And there's always this like, oh, the teachers just get the kids for the 1 year. And then it's even if they're just in the next classroom, it's like they had this very close relationship and then they move on. And I think about how they have to kind of let go of their students. It's not like you've been particular like our songwriting teacher, but you really have been a mentor for so many of us. Like, and we feel this kind of care and love coming from you. I know that I feel that from you. As we might see you once or twice a year when we come to play. You know, I just wonder what it's like for you to be this sort of heart and fixture at the club and see these artists grow and evolve over time. Like, do you really, like, how do you feel about that experience of watching people, like maybe they come to Campfire and then you give them an opener, or then they do a co-bill, like the way they get to grow and then out in the world. Do you feel sort of like a teachery
100%.
Like, you do.
Like that is the easiest equivalent that I can give to this.
Oh,
I feel like
okay.
Like the teacher that stays at the school.
Yeah.
And the students move on and do great things.
Yeah.
You know, and I get to say like, oh, you know, I got to be part of that.
Yeah.
For a time.
And watching that and some, evolution. You
know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. That is the a way that I think about this. Or like, you know, or like I'm the Lorne Michaels, and you know, like all the SNL casts come through
totally.
And go on and do other things. And I'm gonna try to produce their movies and things like that.
You're way more fun than Lorne, though. Way more fun.
Some people like me just hang around.
Yeah, right.
I just hang around the class. I'm the weird old guy yeah. who still you're hangs like around Kenan the class. Thompson
that's been on the seat that's been there for like 15 years.
hey, yeah, I'll do another show. Sure.
I love that. That's great.
That is great. And actually, my question is sort of in the same vein, and the answer might be the same, but what makes you the most proud about Passim right now? And are there things left to accomplish? And what do you think what do you hope for your legacy for the club? Like you, and those are all kind of probably the same thing, actually.
Kind of, you know, like, yeah, there is a lot more to do. There is a lot of work to do with representation on our stage and in our room. And I mean, that is an ongoing thing that is we're actively engaged in and that I'm constantly excited about. It's just something I'm going to be most proud of. You know, it's like, you know, I think that probably the thing that I'm going to be most proud of is the campfire.
Actually, that's really interesting.
Because there wasn't, like, I took ideas from a bunch of things and tried to synthesize them into this one thing. And it has changed and grown and shrunk, you know, over the years.
For those that don't know who might be listening, can you give them a really quick synopsis of what Campfire is and how it came about?
It's a festival that we do over every Memorial Day and Labor Day. It started Labor Day of 1998. And it was just like I was doing a series called Songwriters in the Square, which is, you know, like, you know, which is a play on Songwriters in the Round, but it was in Harvard Square. Funny joke.
So good. And, so good.
And
were you an English major? Sorry. Anyway, sorry.
That was where the usefulness came and ended.
Right? And ended.
And ended right there. And it was the idea was we would take three or four people that were really good, but didn't necessarily have that much audience on their own. And put them in a round together. And you didn't put them in sets because if they did sets, people would come for there to see their friend and then they would leave. And if you put them in the round, then everyone's got to stay and watch the whole damn thing. And you try to put together people that are going to have different audiences, but that will their audiences will like the other performers. Mm. You know, you try to intentionally put these things together. Mm-hmm. And when it came towards Labor Day of 98, holiday weekends are terrible for booking. It's terrible. People go away. You don't want to book a headliner that has a guarantee because you're going to lose money on it. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, let's take this idea and blow it up over a weekend. And the first time we did it, it was only 3 days. It was the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We didn't do the Monday. And it was tied in with the very first iteration of the Boston Folk Festival that WMB was putting together. And so you actually got in for free if you had bought a ticket to that. Mm-hmm. So we were sort of like a side stage mm-hmm. of that. But then you could come to our festival and it was only $5
wow.
for the whole weekend.
Amazing.
Because we didn't know if anyone was going to come. And
wasn't it music from like 10 in the morning till 1 at night kind of thing or something?
It was mostly like noon till 2 a.m. Mm.
2 a.m. I love it.
Lord, yes.
And then over time, it grew. I think it might have started like 4 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Friday, because that wasn't a holiday.
Yeah.
And went till 2. Because back then, we didn't have a beer and wine license, so we had an entertainment license that ran until 4. And there were times when Campfire went from noon until 2 or 3 for all 4 days.
Why did he do it?
People ask me how I did that, and I do not know how I did that, and I do not know why I did that.
Would you get sick after Campfire every time? Like exhaustion?
I would crash pretty hard.
Yeah.
I would crash pretty hard. You know, it's the sort of thing where you don't get sick during because you can't.
Yeah.
And then right. the minute you have a minute off, you're like, I'm so sick.
You're like, I have a fever of 104.
Yeah.
but I did it.
I feel like campfire is a really good indication of how Matt is now trying to do work-life balance, because campfire only goes until like 10 o'clock at night now.
Well, yeah, well, it's funny. Back in 2008, when we had the 10th anniversary, was when we started to end it at midnight. So it was from noon till midnight. And then...
Lame.
So lame.
But the funny thing is, like there were times when we would have a round that would start at 12:30, you know, and go till 2, and we'd have a full house.
Oh, yeah.
For it. But then, you know, culturally, things have shifted so much since then, like not even just in passing, but late night isn't as much of a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And plus the tea shuts down before 1 o'clock anyway.
Right.
And so... we couldn't go that late once we had a beer and wine license anyway. Yeah. You know, we had to shut down. We had to have everyone out by 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then in 2008, we shaved it down to midnight because it was getting harder to fill those late night rounds with performers or audience. Mm-hmm. And then COVID was when it shifted again. You know, like we moved it online, and we did, I think the first time we did shorter days, but like 7 days. Mm-hmm. And then when we came back from COVID, we kind of started slow, and it was like half virtual, half in person. And then, you know, got so that we were doing from like 4 to 11. Mm-hmm. But then we started to get more and more artists and more audience. And so now we're back to from 2 to 11, which feels good. Well, we start at 6 o'clock on Friday and go to 11, and then from 2 to 11 Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
But also what I think is another thing that's really important about it and why it's so tied to your legacy is that it's you really concentrate on up-and-coming or mm-hmm. novice people who you think have something to offer but don't. It's sort of like the farm system for, yeah. for playing Absolutely. The club and stuff, and it tells you about how somebody is on stage. Mm-hmm. And it tells you about how an audience is going to react to them. Mm-hmm. And yeah. it's become a starting point for so many people I can think of,
You know, it is most people's first entry point to the club unless they played an open mic already. Mm-hmm. And it is that farm system. It is that, like, let's see how you do in front of an audience. And most of the time, more than half of the people that play Campfire have never played the club before. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine too, and I know for me, and I'm sure this is true for so many artists, so many of the friends that I made at Campfire are still, I mean, live from New York. I mean, all of my New York friends, we all came together to do it. So we already knew each other, but you just are there for the hang. So you'd be there for the weekend. And it was so fun.
We always want to encourage people to like hang out, because that's how those bonds find themselves. And I know plenty of folks that have done a round and end up really connecting with another artist, and they end up kind of like doing tour swaps where, you know, like I have an audience in Philly and you have an audience and, you know, and so let's do some things.
Yes. I think that's key at any festival, but I feel like specifically Campfire, maybe because when you're doing it, you're younger, you don't necessarily have kids yet. Like, you have so much more space and latitude where you're not dipping in, playing your set and leaving. You're there to really connect with audiences and connect with each other. And I think that was a really important ingredient of Campfire.
Yeah, that's always like the connection, you know, the bringing folks together and finding each other has always been such a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I met so many people. It's amazing. Oh, yeah.
Totally. I think we all have.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, not just in terms of touring artists, but just the local scene, mm-hmm. you know, is like deepening that. And not just, you know, it's across generations and across genres.
Yeah. Mm. Totally.
Feels like maybe, all right, Matt, I have your post-Passim life. You go around the country and you consult with venues on how to make a music town.
But you can't, you can create opportunity, you know, all you can do is create opportunity. You know, it's not necessarily going to happen, mm-hmm. but like creating opportunity is the best thing you can do. Mm. But it's also finding the right people to be on the ground doing that.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Because it's not everyone's thing.
No, but I mean, as I'm it's about that person or that small group of people who believe in music so much and will present it or will encourage it. It could be in Bloomington, Indiana. It could be anywhere. So I think, yes, Cambridge has a well of constantly rotating people who are interested in things and maybe have the money to go do stuff. It might be different than trying to do it in the middle of Kansas somewhere or something. I don't know. But it's the dedication of that person, of which you are, to make things happen and keep working at making things happen, that then it can be a self-fulfilling scene, because then people come and they go, this is amazing. This means something to me. I'm going to keep coming. I'm going to tell my friends to come to this. Because as humans, we're designed to be in a room with people making music. And that's what you encourage. And
I also think we have a very unique thing in this area with the, you know, radio support and the venue support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like there's a whole infrastructure here that a lot of places don't have.
Yeah. You know, right.
There are a bunch of small venues that are programming roughly in the same realm, but aren't competition to each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just different kinds of opportunities all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Passim acts as kind of a home and a landing spot for people. Not only, you know, I mean, an artist, you guys have such a rich scene there. I would die to have something like that here in Colorado Springs. But you all are showing up for each other. You're playing your own shows, but you're going to see your friends when they come to town. And it's like that sort of landing spot. It's like the sort of folk village square where everyone sort of defaults to, which is a really important thing to have, that kind of default landing spot that feels very homey. You know?
And you can come into it at any point. You know, it's like there are people that, you know, they get nervous and like, oh, I'm going to, you know, play a Passim for the first time. And I get the weight of that.
Yeah.
You know, but also there, you know, Diane Ziegler is someone who, you know, was riding high in the mid 90s and kind of just got out of it for a long time and now is coming back and doing things, and, you know, and is coming back and playing Campfire and, you know. And breaking news, I just booked 3 nights of Girly Man.
Yes!
Wow!
Holy no way!
The last time they played, you opened for them, Edie. It's just like they're back at it.
Oh, and, you know, I opened for their whole final tour. That was when things were not feeling great them. So, and it's so cool to see that they're coming back. It makes me so happy.
Yeah. And they're doing it because they're happy about it now.
That's so awesome.
So this has been a lot of fun. And I want to wrap up with the lightning round.
Yeah.
It's a very special Matt Smith lightning round. And it's called Club Passim Trivia, specifically for Matt Smith.
Wow.
Take it away.
It looks like I'm up first. You gave me my first, after decades as a band guy, you gave me my first ever solo opener slot. Do you remember who it was for?
Steve Poltz?
Correct. It's amazing. Amazing.
I had a moment of where I was like, I don't know if he's going to know this one. And I was so wrong.
Right there.
Amazing. Wow. Okay.
All right. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, God. Now I'm nervous. Okay. Now I've set the bar really high.
I believe in you. Do you remember... And can you sing a line or two from the super catchy chorus of our old friend Christopher Smith's autobiographical song about him being hangry?
No.
Do you remember Low Blood Sugar Chris?
Oh, yes.
I can't actually remember the melody.
I can't remember the melody at all, but now that you say Low Blood Sugar Chris, that rings a bell.
It was his only song, and it was hilarious. And I do remember you.
Did it at Campfire, probably.
He did it at Campfire, and everyone in that room was singing it at the top of their lungs. All right, Dinty, you're next.
All right. What is the largest number of performers that have ever been on the Passim stage at the same time, and what show was it?
I'm going to say 18, and it was my 50th birthday.
God damn it, you're amazing.
How the hell? How to hell.
That was a memorable night.
It was a memorable night, and it was amazing. There were two harp players.
Like, not this kind of harp, this kind of harp.
That's phenomenal.
Okay. I'm not surprised that you knew it was your birthday, but I'm surprised you knew the exact number was 18.
Yes, I know.
And should I be surprised? Probably not. Dinty, you've got the next one.
Oh, I've got the next one too. This is a two-parter trivia, but what performer do you think has played the club more than anybody else? And I have a suspicion that it's different answer of what headliner has played the club more than anybody else.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, like, and you're just talking in my time or in history?
I'm talking about modern era, your time, let's say, 30 years.
Oh, you know, like, Zach is certainly up there. Zachariah Hickman is certainly up there. But I mean, like, even Ellis Paul, I mean, as a headliner, probably has been up there more than most. But there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time on that stage. But Zach usually will win in my mind because he's got part of so many different things.
Ding, ding, ding. That was
my only
answer.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And it makes sense that maybe Ellis is because he's been so consistent for so many years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does like several nights in a row, right? Around the New Year's stuff.
Yeah.
Although exactly. Peter Mulvey, there's
Lamplighter.
Yeah, he'll do like 5 to 8 days of Lamplighter every year.
Yeah. Can you do the math and then we'll follow up?
Yeah. If you could just send us a spreadsheet, that would be great. Just
I bet Zach just has a spreadsheet.
AI would probably find it for you.
Let's not waste any AI on it. Matt is our original AI.
Okay.
Matt, I'm going to swap I'm going to put the question at the end. So I have sometimes played in this group called Live from New York with Teddy Goldstein. Actually, I'm not going to say their names, with three of my very best friends in the world. And I was already friends with them in New York, but you at a NERFA conference years ago put us together and an in the round at a showcase. And we called it Live from New York. In fact, I think you called it Live from New York. And then we kind of became a band and we made a record. Currently, we're in the iteration of the four of us. But can you name all original members of Live from New York?
Edie Carey, Teddy Goldstein, Ann Heaton, Andrew Kerr, Sam Schaber, Ina May Wolf, Frank Morata Jr.
Oh, wow.
Very good.
And the first time we did a show at the club, it was Live from New York. It's Wednesday night.
Because we probably couldn't do a weekend.
Yeah, there was. We didn't.
Oh, my God. You're amazing. And I wanted
So Ina May just came up the other day because Kenny White was at the club on Friday.
Yeah.
And he said the first time he played the club, he thought it was like 1975 and he did it with Ina May Wool.
Wow. Oh my God.
Like, I must have been so young.
That is crazy.
Toddlers.
I didn't think that we were, I don't know. I didn't think we were that different in age. That's crazy. Ina May Wool. She's still out there playing lit in New York. I see her name around when I'm playing there. I love bringing up Live from New York because it's just a tiny example of all the ways that you connect so many artists and that you have like wittingly or unwittingly spawned so many incredible friendships. And that feels like that's the heart of what you do.
I went on tour with Live from New York.
I know. It was the most fun.
On a tour.
We all had abs of steel from laughing hysterically the entire time. It was the best. We love you, Matt. This is so fun.
Love you right back.
One thing that Matt and I got to do one time, I was at his house and I had my computer and I opened up the Folk Alley Music Master Library. And I was like, Matt, I bet you know 100% of all of these musicians, because I still only know like 30% of the Folk Alley library names. I'll like open it up and I'm like, who the hell is this? And you are like I feel like you like disassociated because you're like, oh, my God, I haven't heard this name since 1994.
And then I was like, and they did a co-bill with
right,
this
person. Yeah.
And,
like, yeah.
And they were wearing a red shirt. Like, you couldn't remember
it. The third song that they did was.
And their cat was sick that night. They were really distraught. Right.
The moon was full gibbous.
There was one in the third row that had a pizza, you know.
And it was so rainy.
Man.
I mean, we are not even really exaggerating.
It's not, yeah. Okay?
Not
yeah.
much, no.
But it's like Abby often says, she's like, I don't understand the things that you have in here.
So many great things.
Gosh. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for taking the time. This was like so, it just felt like, you know, it feels like what Passim feels like. It feels like home, hearing you guys talk to each other. And congratulations on 3 decades, Matt. You're America's sweetheart. You're an inspiration. You're the wind beneath our wings.
All the wind. We love you so much, Matt. Congratulations.
I'm breaking the wind beneath
your
wings.
Oh my God. Yes, even better. There it is.
There we go. Well, I love you all dearly. You're all such an important part of my life, and to be able to be part of what you all do is a thrill to me.
Mm. It's a huge part.
Thank
huge,
you,
huge part.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check us out on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app, or you can go to BasicFolk.com. You can also listen wherever you get your shows. If you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend, perhaps that friend who is very passionate about where they volunteer, and you're thinking that maybe perhaps they would like to take that volunteerism to the next level and need some inspo. Send them this episode. Okay, thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.